Jika, and welcome to A Portrait of Us, an NGV podcast where Australia's art becomes an instigator for holding deeper conversations about life, culture, and the incredible diversity of this country. I'm Brooke Blurton, and in this podcast, I get to talk to some of Australia's most significant artists. Together, we'll delve into how art reflects, challenges, and enriches our perspectives, drawing us closer to one another through dialogue and discovery. Here, art isn't just observed. It's our meeting point, our bridge to connect. In each episode, I speak with artists who embody the experiences and stories that make up Australia today. This podcast is all about celebrating Australian art and its people in its many shapes and forms. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Kyra Mangdalo and Kelly Koumoulatsis about fashion, adornment, and the body. As First Nations Australian women, their insights offer a profound and historically rich perspective on garment making. Although they approach fashion from distinct angles, their work beautifully illuminates the evolution of body covering in Australia since before colonisation and explores the deep connections between fashion, family, and identity. Kelly is a descendant of the Wagaya and Wemba Wemba people from northwest Victoria. Her practice, which includes sculpture, jewellery making, painting and printmaking, merges traditional and contemporary methods and materials, drawing on her Aboriginal and Greek heritage to express her political and cultural outlook. Throughout her career, Kelly has been an instrumental figure in the contemporary reclamation of the possum skin cloak making tradition. In the early years of her practice, Kelly produced her own cloaks before going on to experiment in the use of possum skins in creating ethereal prints on paper. Kelly's work is held in many collections across Australia, including the NGV. Kyra is a Quandamooka artist with links to the Mardigan people of Cunnamulla. Her multidisciplinary practice investigates legacies of colonialism, posing important questions such as how we remember and acknowledge Indigenous histories. Kyra works with various materials to share her rich heritage, stories and traditions to educate audiences and strengthen her connection to country. Her printmaking explores intergenerational trauma as a result of forced integration on colonial missions, and her use of local materials in her sculpture nurtures an experience of country. Kyra is currently undertaking a PhD at Queensland College of Art and regularly exhibits in both solo and group exhibitions nationwide. Kyra won the 2021 Telstra Emerging Artist Award at the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Awards and a special commendation at the 2021 Churchy National Emerging Art Prize.
Thank you so much, Kelly and Kyra, for coming in. Can you both begin by telling me how your practices of garment making and body covering have evolved? Kyra, would you like to begin?
Yeah, so mine started when I studied at QCA at Southbank there, and I started looking into my own heritage and going back and looking at Mungalba, so Maiora Mission. And the thing that stood out for me and when I spoke to my mob is how they would talk about garments and how the children wore their garments and also how our grannies wore their garments. And from there, it came into like this big unraveling of how fashion and garments play an important role in today's society and during colonization.
And Kelly, what about you? Did your interest also begin with a sense of history and ancestral connection?
So my garment making sort of was the culmination of 35 years of looking at possum cloaks. And so my initial practice was very much about possum cloaks and making possum cloaks. And so when I was very young in the Melbourne Museum, it was my first job when I was about 19, saw cloaks and thought, where are all the cloaks? But anyway, fast forward 35, 40 years, I did printmaking at uni and I combined printmaking with possum fur print, which was really an important part of the dresses, the garments. So I made the portraits, which are sculptures of my ancestors. So the whole goal of my whole practice over the 30, 40 years is to reclaim stories, culture, family. And I was also always, as a youth and a child, obsessed with colours and fashion and design. And I didn't really realise it then, but I used to create like installations. So textiles particularly I was always interested in. And so it was a natural progression over many, many years to make cloaks, to do printmaking, to make tissue paper possum skin cloaks, to make digitised prints cloaks, and then to make three-dimensional sculptures out of tissue paper, printed with tissue paper, which was also part of expressing my connection to my family going back to 1840s, 1850s through my research and creating the garments to celebrate their lives and tell really positive stories about resilience and success of these people who lived in the 1860s, 70s, 80s and in the early 19th century. So it was actually a way of telling a story and somebody who's just a girl that loved
fashion,
dresses and things.
You touched on resilience and storytelling, and I'd love to tease that out a little in relation to fashion and identity. To what extent do you think what we wear relates to our sense of self? When did you first unpack the history of possum skin cloaks?
I found out about possum skin cloaks when I was about 19 and looked in the storage area of the Melbourne Museum when I started as a youth at the Melbourne Museum.
Yeah.
And I was blown away
mainly
by the possum cloaks. There are only two traditional cloaks in the collection at that time. And I was totally blown away by them. As somebody, as I said, that was very much about, you know, clothing and design and different eras of clothing. I used to collect them as a youth. And so to see these garments, which were the cloaks, totally blew my mind. So that went back to when I was 19. And it took me a long time to get to the point, like 33, 32, to get the skins. And then it took me another couple of years to actually make my first cloak. And it is really important. I was totally blown away even as a youth, understanding and feeling that I just felt this overwhelming sense of loss, like where are all our cloaks?
Yeah.
Where are they? Everybody had one. Hardly anyone was making them. I was like, there was a few people, Ralph Nichols, Sir Doug Nichols' brother, maybe. They were certainly had cloaks in their family. His nephews, Ron Murray and Doug Nichols, they have cloaks now. They're kangaroo. They were sort of made around 1920s. But there weren't then. It happened later because that was sort of like late 70s, early 80s. So it happened a bit later. So, and it became huge, as we know. And obviously the fact that you go anywhere you go, or often go now, there's a ceremony and there'll be a cloak, or people will just be wearing it as a, you know, like a little shawl, or like it's really a really strong part of Southeastern people's identity.
Mm. And what about you, Kyra? Do you see a connection between clothing and a sense of self?
You know, for me, it's that topic of how we'd use possum skin cloak as a form of identity. You know, when it was during the time of colonization, how they used garments to cover up our identity. You know, they take away our traditional objects and used Western garments to try and cover our ways, our knowledges and our culture. For me, it was, that strong resistance and resilience that, you know, they used it as this tool to hide our identity, but our people wore these garments and still had our artifacts, had our adornments all emerged within it. And, you know, it brings us to today, how we use garments as a tool to show our identity. So it's just, you know, that flip and that reverse. We used their ways and now we're using them to reclaim who we are.
Both of you actually have mentioned reclamation. Do you think that your work encompasses that? Like, this is mine?
And 100%. I feel like reclamation, but also what people may say was lost was never lost.
True.
Whereas more it was asleep, and we're just reawakening it all.
I love that.
I have to say, apart from reclamation, which was so important, and I can't really emphasize how important it was when I started making them when I was in my 30s, because it was actually, you think it's just a technical process, but actually it's a, for me, it was a very spiritual process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're moving into a new identity, connecting you with your spiritual side, which is part of your identity, for me, became very connected to the object. I'm very connected to possums now. I'm very connected to that animal after using their skins for over 20 years. But what I wanted to say to do with identity, in my research, what I found, there were two quotes about going right back, say, early 1800s. One man recorded, he was non-Indigenous, obviously, he was given a cloak, and then he's walking around with this community of people that he was with, the First Peoples, and one of the men said to him, oh, I know whose cloak that is. It's got his designs on it. That's such and such. And I said, oh, well, there you go. That's quite clear, you know, because we're always surmising that the designs tell you whose story it is or what individual. But another direct quote from that time is that one man had the designs, which contemporary artists constantly kind of do, where you get the markings in the wood, the patterns. Well, this particular tree had the markings from the worms, and it had quite a deep groove in the wood where the worms had eaten the wood away, and it was very beautiful. And so this particular man had simply done the beautiful wood markings on his. So this is a record that goes back to early 1800s. So I find that really fascinating, to do with identity and, you know, design. And so we're getting this glimpse going back 200 years or so, direct from the First Peoples of that time.
You're both concerned with history and archives. Can we talk a little bit about the histories of fashions, garments, and even jewellery, which we've kind of touched on but haven't gone into? Kelly, you've got some beautiful pieces on today, which I'm looking at. Can you describe them for our listeners?
Well, yes, this sort of beady, long necklacey thing, which is, it's not beads, it's actually, I'm not sure if it's seeds.
Yeah, I was looking at it really closely, but I couldn't figure it out.
But it's wood. It's little, yeah. They're like seeds, but they're just very small, circular, and they're different sort of same tonal colour. But I got it because it's wood, because it's natural, and I just love wood. And I've got a lot, I'm collecting a lot of wood beads, and so this one's a little bit different because they're just like slices of wood, and it makes a very nice texture.
Did you make these pieces?
I have not made these pieces.
Oh, okay.
I'm going through so many op shops, and I'm getting all these things that people don't like, which are wood, which are considered very daggy, and and I'm getting these most amazing, very unusual kinds of wooden beads as well. And I'm collecting shell necklaces before they disappear. I've got all these shell necklaces, and my partner's saying, are you going crazy? I mean, how many necklaces of shell do you need? But I mean, we're losing our primary resources. Shells are one of the things that are disappearing.
Mm.
And my first shell necklace that I got in an op shop was in the 70s. And it's actually very precious Tasmanian shell. It's a traditional necklace from Tasmania, which I only realised in the last 10 years, like I got it when I was a kid. But more recently, so these are from the op shop. My jewellery, a lot of my jewellery now comes from the op shop. I'm just actually just started my first reed necklace for myself.
Oh, wow.
And that's fun. It's such a gentle material to work with, those reeds. I've got my tiny little saw and a little bit of sandpaper. It's a very beautiful process. Mm. No mental work at all. Just use your hands. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Just so for the listeners, pre-contact, which won't be surprising to people, but what was worn were feathers, bones in terms like a nose bone. Bones would have been used to peg your cloak, etc. Strings to hang necklaces on. You know, they might have been made from plants. But fascinatingly, Possum fur, which was plucked off the skin and sort of rubbed like that. I don't know if you've ever made any string, which I have. The Tasmanian technique is so good. Even I can do it. But anyway, that's how you do it. You sort of rub it on your thigh. I think that's how you make the possum one. So even possum string, reeds, you know, like bamboo.
Yeah.
But, you know, the common reed in Victoria, I really love those. They were in my family, my ancestors. Little beads are probably 1.5 centimetres. So the reed was just cut up and then tidied up. And then you'd have many, many, many layers. The Wimmera one, which is where I'm from, they have a photo, a beautiful photo in the mid-century 1800s. Very full, beautiful, big reed necklace. And, oh, they're beautiful. And a lot of people are doing those again down here. Well, not a lot, but some. And they're just stunning. And it's very exciting. And pelts, like the skins, and just getting possum strips to make like a lap or, you know, headband. And just to finish on that, the ochre to decorate the body, all the different ochres, because we have, you know, everybody be familiar with the red, the black, which is the charcoal, the white, which is like the clayey one.
Yeah.
But there are blues and greens as well. And then the yellows, you know, there's all kinds of yellows and oranges and all kinds of reds. So, and they would have adorned the body. And the different colours were applied at different times for different ceremony and ritual. Yeah. So it's really exciting. And what's even more exciting is all the amazing work that's coming out of our artists down here, particularly supported by the Koori Heritage Trust and Creative Vic. You know, work in silver and bone, which is really exciting. My favourite piece of my own is my emu claws, which are really beautiful, black, shiny. They're kind of an abstract, perfectly symmetrical, very modern-looking shape. And echidna quills. A lot of people have started using echidna quills, which I don't really know that traditionally or pre-contact that they were, but there's so much happening in Victoria. It's a very exciting space. Marie Clark and Gail Harradine, Sandy Hodge. There's a whole lot of people that, and young people, because I'm so old now, I don't know all the young artists. But
how's
there's,
you going?
It's actually really exciting. There's so much happening in the jewelry, you know, that started to happen in the jewelry space.
Yeah, you work with sculptures and including clay and
ceramics. You know, carry on with what you're saying. My mob over Minjeriba there, our women wore beautiful reed necklaces from saltwater, and a few of us now, we went back to the museums, had a look at our objects and started recreating it and started wearing it in public scenes, to make claim on this is what our people, this is our identity. And, even working with some of my friends, and they researched their mob and they started recreating what their practices are and what their mob wore. It's just, that poetic feel, just walking around into today's world and just reclaiming what our ancestors wore.
Little side note that I learned recently around the different clays is that they hold different minerals and vitamins that I had no idea meant so much to our health. So
right.
you talk about all the different coloured clays. So there's the pink clay, there's charcoal, obviously. Yeah.
Pink, yes.
And there's a green clay, which I had no idea is used a lot in sort of holistic health as well to absorb vitamins and minerals. And a side note, sorry. I know we're talking about fashion and jewelry, and
I love hearing you, Cara, describe how you've revisited history and created pieces that your ancestors wore, which you now yourself wear on your body. That is so beautiful. And I guess, what's your hope for the future? Would you like to see younger generations wearing clothes and jewelry which have historical significance?
Yeah, definitely. In everything, in every aspect, even wearing our traditional dilly bags just in everyday life would be deadly, you know, especially our adornments.
Yeah.
It's reed necklaces, 100%. That'd be a whole new level to see our mob and our young ones just walking around in our traditional adornments.
Yeah. How do you feel about the wider Australia doing it, though? Just a quick question.
Well, I think we should make them.
Yeah, of
and
course.
And then they can buy them and wear them. I think that's a fair. I think that's fair trade. I think that's. I don't think they should take over our material cultural practices as such, but it doesn't mean that they can't make things that they're inspired by through, you know, Indigenous patterns and designs. But, you know, that's a very hot topic. It's very controversial.
Yeah,
but
my
great auntie, I asked my great aunt, who's long gone, I had a friend who'd made the snakes out of branches and painted them like sort of like Indigenous people that he had lived with up north. And I said, well, aunt, what do you think about this? And she said, well, if that man sat with him and showed him and, you know, she said, I don't have a problem with that. But you know, to other people, that's highly incorrect procedure and practice. But I just have to say on fashion and what's happening now, around the 90s, early 90s, we had two fashion parades down here in Melbourne. We had women through the neighbourhood house. Instead of focusing on mass and literacy through the traditional methods, I sort of led arts as a means of teaching mass and literacy and got all the women to do screen printing. So we got a screen printing teacher and we produced all these fabrics, absolutely amazing. And what was really astounding was how these women that had never really done any art could just produce these amazing things. So we actually ran a little shop. We were a bit naughty because we paid the white trained teacher the same as the sewer, as the printmaker, as the screen printer, as the person who made the design. So the first exhibition was just all these fabrics, and it was in a cafe upstairs in Fitzroy, and it was just beautiful. The fabrics were absolutely stunning. The second one was like a proper fashion parade with all the garments, and I've just found, a friend just found some photos, so it's great we've got that record because it's actually very important. You know, that was happening in Melbourne back then, so, yeah, very exciting.
Touching on that, I've been to a couple of the First Nations runway and Australian Fashion Week. You know, there is this take on contemporary First Nations designs. How do you feel about these shows in particular? Like, they generally will do all of the First Nations artists and designs on one day, and then you can only see them on that one day, where I would love to see them integrated in all shows and all runways and all, you know, fashion events to be
there. Yeah, that's absolutely
another
right.
Controversial question, but yeah. I mean, I would like to know both of your views because you are creating pieces that obviously contribute as well to these kind of shows, you mean.
The only fashion parades that I've been to in the last few years have been only Indigenous. They had one in Geelong, actually, which was... Oh, wow, it was so amazing. And the people wearing cloaks as well, which was really beautiful. Yeah. And the diversity and they were just, look, a lot of it was just really contemporary ways of expressing yourself through fabric and colour and design and not specifically to do with patterns and designs relating to Indigenous people. It was just a lot of really beautiful clothing and fabrics, you know. A lot of it also had the patterning, but it was very interesting. People are just doing what they want. It's these days. It doesn't have to be, yes, well, that's obviously First Peoples, you know. They're just doing beautiful things.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it should be across fashion parades. It shouldn't just be, you know, isolated, segregated.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's amazing to highlight Indigenous fashion to start it all off, but it should be merged within non-Indigenous fashion and have it all together. You know, I feel like it feels like a bit of segregation having
it
separate,
hey.
You
yeah.
know. But, yeah, no, it should be merged all through the week.
Yeah, I was having these yarns with a lot of the First Nations models and the difference in the spaces. So when it is a First Nations show, there is this like cultural safety and environment that they love and they thrive in because they get to wear these pieces that feel so close to their identity and their mob, you know. And they just felt like as much as they would love this integration with other shows and events and exhibitions, there is like a lack of cultural safety that they feel.
Yeah.
I do think that it doesn't really matter what industry you're in this 21st century we're in. I think in some ways things have gone backwards, which is reflective of the yes vote. And I think it doesn't matter if you're in the fashion industry and you're trying to work with Indigenous people, whether it's fashion designers, architects, whatever, if you're bringing them into a major corporate body, then they are going to have the same issues that Aboriginal people have. Oh, not always, but I think things have gone a little bit backwards, the interaction between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. And I also think that the 21st century workplace culture, it's not always easy. In the education department where I work in Geelong, there's a few of us that are older, but I'm kind of getting up there with the older ones. And so what I mean by that, that's normal. But you go into a non-Indigenous environment, especially with the pandemic and cutbacks, there's all these younger people. No offence, you guys, but the culture's changed, and I think it's very difficult for a lot of older Aboriginal people, and I would think that would be the same dealing in the fashion world, because we know fashion design art can be a really harsh space anyway, because it's so competitive. And so for Aboriginal people to express themselves, to have autonomy and self-determination in the fashion space, I mean, it is happening, but I'm just saying you've just identified, and the fact that you're so young and you're identifying it, it sort of highlights that even in that industry, I mean, look what happened with the Aboriginal flag. I mean, they took the Aboriginal flag. You're going to have to buy your Aboriginal flag rights to use the flag. I mean, but on that, look at Laura Thompson.
Oh, she's amazing.
And, you know, she's the one that, one of the ones that fought to get the rights of the flag back.
Yeah.
And all that amazing jewellery and clothing, and that's the other thing that we haven't really touched on that I just wanted to mention quickly, is like when you're talking about the football T-shirts, well, down here they're kind of everywhere. You know, there's just so many people, children and adults, all wearing, you hear, oh, yeah, well, such and such did the designs in that one, and such did, and it doesn't sort of matter where you go. People are constantly referring to who produced the design on the T-shirts, and, you know, particularly the T-shirts. And then the other thing that's happened in the art, culture, fashion down here also is the tote bag. So suddenly you're getting all these tote bags with all these designs as well, which is really, really cool. Like Deanne Gilson's. Oh, I just love it, with the beautiful little net bag and the beautiful flowers, Indigenous flowers. It's, the original paintings are stunning, and to get it on your tote bag, pretty cool.
Kara, you recently had a work acquired by the NGV, a woven mission dress and dilly bag with native flora from Quandamooka country. This is an outstanding piece which references your own granny's mission dress. Can you speak to this work a little in connection with the idea of reclamation?
Yeah, I recently created a work. It's called One Continuous String, and it's actually a granny's dress from the mission. So we'd have our grannies look after the jarjums when they were on the mission, and it's just talking about how without our grannies teaching that weaving or keeping it alive, today we wouldn't really have the opportunity to awaken that practice again. And, you know, through my work and through my whole practice, it is talking about that reclamation and how today we're able to do what we do because of our ancestors. And also I'd just like to acknowledge that we wouldn't be where we are today and making these big moves if it wasn't for all the generations before us, loud, proud, you know, making these big arguments and fights for us to do what we do today.
Can I just ask Kira, could you just talk a little bit about designs? I think there was a reference to designs with your garments that you found.
Yeah, so there was, when our grannies would weave, they slowly introduced a pattern, and it's more of a wave, and they introduced it in our goulets, so our dilly bags, and that was to make it more fashionable so they could sell to sailors. So I've recreated and rewoven this into our granny's garments. And it's talking about how they recreated these beautiful designs within our traditional weaving technique. And you're all just immersed into that dress. So it talks about, you know, these garments were used as a tool, but what they didn't know is that our grannies were still continuing that practice.
They were business women.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's touch on one of your works too, Kelly, which the NGV presented in the 2023 exhibition Melbourne Now. Like Kara's, this work titled Portrait of Sister-in-Laws also references historical dress. Can you tell us a little bit more about this dress?
Well, yes. With my tissue paper garments that are printed with possum fur, most of them are black tissue paper with white fur print, so it's quite a stark contrast and it creates like a, it almost looks like real fur. But why I made them was, going back and looking at all these photos, my great-great-grandmother and her sister-in-law, so one's Wedigaya, one's Wamba Wamba, Granny was born 1887. Her sister-in-law would have been born around the same time. But they were wearing, and the reason I made those Victorian dresses with the great big sleeves, I just adore them. The reason I made them was because that's what they were wearing at the time. And really proudly and beautifully, they were just as elegant as anybody at that time. They totally owned them because there's so many distressing, depressing images of Aboriginal people wearing clothing, European clothing of the time. But my relatives going back to those periods were so, either the men were so handsome and so beautifully coiffed with their beautiful moustaches and beautiful groomed hair and shirts, and the women, I mean, if you look closely, the boots were pretty, you know, wearing like boots, not elegant little ladies' boots. But my point is they owned the clothing. They were just women in the time, like non-Indigenous people, wearing the garments that they loved.
Yeah, I love that. Beautiful. Another aspect of your practice, Kyra, is ceremony, and in particular marriage. Can we talk a little about how this influences your work?
Yeah, with my printed dress, Unconstitutional Love, I recreated a garment. And so with my printmaking, I use a fabric. It's called tarlatan. And what it's used is to take away, you know, colour off an etching plate. So I use it to represent that assimilation, that attempt of assimilation. And instead of taking away the black, I rub the black back into the tarlatan, you know, and that's me putting back in our cultural ways, our cultural knowledges, back into this starchy fabric. I recreated this wedding dress because our people weren't, they had to ask for permission to be married, and with both my grannies, and I created a dress knowing that that's what they deserved. They deserved a wedding dress. And growing up, I remember my nan spoke about lace and, you know, beautiful fabric. So, you know, going back off my memory, I recreated these dresses for them. Like you said, they wore the clothes. You know, they look beautiful, elegant. So me being able to create this beautiful, elegant dress without that negative thought behind the dress, yeah, for me, it was.
I love the way you've used the tarlatan too. Like, I've got tarlatan, which I use to fix my possum cloak. Because I had this possum cloak from over 20 years ago, and when I, as an educator, I used to get children in a classroom and line them up, and I'd put the cloak on everyone, and it's been to weddings and funerals, and it's just falling apart at a photo shoot at Ebenezer where Granny was born in the northwest of Victoria. The building still stands, and it got shredded because it's so old and it's chemically tanned, and because it's had so many bodies touching it with oils, it's just ripped. Whereas the ones that it's kept in the box at the Koori Heritage Trust from the same period is fine. I've used the tarlatan. I couldn't find anything, and I said to my partner at the time, John, what do you think? Because he's just amazing what he can fix. He said, oh, try the tarlatan. And I just love that tarlatan. So I just glued it with glue that dries. And it's fantastic. It's just fixed my possum cloak. So it's a very interesting thing, isn't it, that tarlatan? I'd love to see what you've done. And it's interesting that we've both done the dresses and we've both had an interaction with printmaking.
Exactly, yeah. It's really interesting. It's that mark making, isn't it?
Yeah.
That form of documentation.
Yeah. Because you're a younger woman. Do you mind if I ask? Because you're a younger woman, because I'm an older woman, right? Mm-hmm. So do you mind? Like, I'm 62. How old are you?
27.
Yeah, so it's a major difference. So, and we're both doing similar things, but what made you want to use the dress? Where did that start from? Did it start before you did an art practice, or did it start after you did an art practice?
Oh, See, that's the I grew up, obviously grew up, you know, hearing stories, but it did start during my research journey.
Yeah.
I was studying, that's when it all started for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And just hearing, you know, especially the archives, reading about it, reading about garments, and then hearing the way my people spoke about garments and how they were so different just really got me intrigued.
Kyra, have you made anything that is just a garment that is like a fashion object from your practice apart? Have you just done the dresses or have you done other garments?
Yes.
Yeah, so, or have you made bags as well? String bags?
Yeah. So I make dilly bags and I wear my dilly bags. So I wear all my dilly bags. I don't think I've, have not worn a dilly bag yet. And, and then I see mob around me, they want to wear my dilly bag. So we go traditional ways and they give me something they think is worthy, maybe ochre from their country, and then I give them a dilly bag. So it's that form of trade.
Mm.
Whereas dresses, no, I've never made anything like to wear. It's more been printmaking and woven dresses.
Yeah, lovely. One of the things that I've did, and it took me years, it takes me so long to actualize an idea, but eventually I got there. I made silk scarves that had digitized, photoshopped possum fur print. It was just a pattern of fur, really, but with the different colours, like, you know, aqua and blue and ochre, really dark reds and blacks, and got these really beautiful silk scarves made. And and they're very popular, and I always run out because they just usually sell. And so that's something that I've really loved, is making these lovely scarves, which actually come from a possum skin fur print. So the literal print that I made is then digitized, photoshopped to get beautiful colours and effects. So that's been lovely. And then I did 3.5 sort of metre long lengths of fabric. And then I put them away for like a couple of years, and my friend said, no, they're too precious. I'm not cutting them up. And so I think, I suppose I have to do something. But they're more like artworks, but digitized, you know, this fabric of possum fur in, you know, really sort of very bright colours and just with a bit of the patterning. So that's kind of a modern fashion thing that I did do. And then one more interesting thing that did happen was the, with the tunnel that they're, you know, everyone's building tunnels for trains everywhere around Australia. Well, and so here they had this, and they probably do it in other states and territories, they put up these like big banners. And so they asked me, could they use an artwork to cover the tunnel? You know how they do that? So they blew up this artwork that won this art prize. And it was possum fur, so they totally blew it up. And it was huge, and they reproduced it because that particular one was hand-sewn with twine, like possum pelts. And so it was a little bit more interesting than just a straight fur print. And then when it came down, they said, well, would you like to – I said, can I keep it? And it was huge. It would have weighed a ton. They said, would you like us to turn it into bags? That's what we're doing with everybody else's. So they turned them into handbags. So I've kind of got these little tote bags made out of these possum fur prints.
Deadly.
Yeah, it's one. Very cool.
Yeah, proper. Sounds deadly.
Can we all try something?
Yeah.
Sorry, Kara, I was reading that you do ceramics as well.
Yeah, so with my ceramics, I make, so through my mother's line, my great-grandfather was born under a tree. Bless. So I recreate these trees with markings from his country, but obviously contemporary markings. And, yeah, it's just talking about how my grandfather was born under a tree and, you know, these strong family roots of who my mob are now.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Sorry, that was a curious question that I had.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Kelly, does your Greek heritage play any part in your art practice?
Your Greek side.
Yes. And guess what? I just found some old slides. The first thing I made I did a family tree. First thing I made was this very ugly clay head, right? But the clay head had three faces. And it was the first time I was actually trying to incorporate my Scottish ancestry. The Greek face was great because I made all these columns. So I made these miniature columns and then I just broke them up and put them in the face. And that worked really well. And then on the Koori face, I used a lot of pebbles and she wasn't very pretty. Then I sort of just made a more European one to show my three faces. And I was trying to embrace my Scottish heritage as well, because really that's my mum's father, which is pretty big deal. And so mum's heritage. So that was the first thing. Much more successful was my second attempt at expressing my being brought up in two cultures, because I was really brought up in two cultures, Greek and Aboriginal, really, and then went out into the white world, the dominant culture. So I had painted canvases with different colours, so the ochres, background, different, just, you know, with white, and mixed them and just created nice texture and colour. And then the Mediterranean blue, the first one I had with my mum and my father, which is tiny from a photograph, and the blue side's my dad, and the ochre side's my mum. And then stemming off each side from that, I had my dad's parents. There's Yaya, there's Papu. And then on the other side, I had mum's father and her mother, and then the great-grandmother that I was talking about with the dress. And so I just created, like, basically like a visual family tree. You would write it, but I've created it using photos and mixed media, like painting. And that was just at uni, but that was my first attempt. And I keep thinking that I would like to make some garments for the Greek culture. They have something called Salik. When my dad was a kid, I've only been to my dad's island twice, but in the early 80s when I went, there was still an old man who was wearing, you know, those baggy pants. I think they call them Salik. So I was thinking I wanted to make some tissue paper pants and garments. But it was very hard to work with my dad. He found it very difficult to understand my art, to be honest. He's like, what is she doing? Whilst he was proud, it was sometimes a little bit too out there for him, because, you know, art is a pretty picture to some people, isn't it? So, but yes, I have, but not a lot, but I totally recognise my Greek culture. And there's a book coming out soon, and I sort of talk about being Greek a lot and how really being Greek and being Aboriginal, how both sides taught me, because whilst mum's Indigenous, she's very academic, very able to handle bureaucracy. And when I say academic, my focus on that is her research. She could find, you know, she found things through research. She taught things to students and to the government through research. So I learnt about research through her. And the other thing I learnt from my dad is through your hands, you grow things, you make things, you do things. He was talking, you know, he was couldn't really read or write much, you know, because of the war and being displaced and walking across Europe and being on concentration camp type situations. So he missed out on his education, but everything, he was still happy. He just made food, and he made this and he made that. So I kind of learned research, and I learned how to do things, because both sides were asking questions of themselves, like, how do I do this? And so really that's what I learned. One of the things that I learned from being asked to do a book about my art was that both my parents taught me how to find things and how to do things.
Have we got a name for the book? Not yet?
Well, the editorial team, which is no longer old men, they're all really young women,
love.
Three of them, they're amazing, and they've called it, they've taken it from one of my exhibitions, Majum Bambandilla, which is possum cloak to shine in many colours, and then the subtitle is The Art and Country of Kalikoumalatsos.
That is so beautiful.
So it's very exciting, but anyway.
First book published?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
But it's not just me. It's co-authored with Dr. Paola Bella,
yeah,
who's got seven articles, you know, reflecting on, like, the sovereignty in Aboriginal art, or feminism in Aboriginal art, and black humour in Aboriginal art. And it's very interesting working with that team of young women, because they let me rein on the literary content. And there's many contributions from poets that tell my narrative, and I use their poetry or writing as an example, but they would not let me control the visuals. They pretty much controlled. So therefore there's a lot of images of me.
I love that.
Anyway, with cloaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kelly and Kara, for coming in. I've enjoyed this chat so much and really appreciate your time.
Yeah, Dudley, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to the NGV staff for inviting us.
Thank you for joining me on this episode.
I would like to acknowledge that this conversation took place on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country. We pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are listening, as well as the elders past, present and emerging. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.